Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to start with Russia. I want to go back a little bit in the history of what's happened. So as you know, Russia announced its ban on US beef and pork more than a year ago, in February 2013, following their decision that they would apply their zero tolerance on the use of beta agonists and ractopamine. So the United States developed its export program, product verification program, for the non-use of beta agonists for the Russian market. And we were waiting for the Russians to relist factories, plants to start exporting to Russia again. And that took a while, but we were up and running at the beginning of this year. But Russia had still not relisted plants. And then in February of this year, the European Union had to suspend its exports of pork for Russia following their first incidents of African swine fever. And so that really was a game changer. And you'd think, what is Russia going to do? The European Union is supplying 15,000 tons of pork products per week to Russia. This is going to be certainly an opportunity for the United States. The initial reaction from the Europeans was from individual member states. There were some very significant attempts to break some bilateral country-to-country agreements for Russian veterinary services. As you remember, Russia refused to accept the European Union's proposal of a regionalization, which would, you know, would be the normal procedure with the animal disease outbreaks. Russia reminded the European Union that when Russia first had African swine fever a long time ago, the European Union didn't apply regionalization in Russia, even though there wasn't any export from Russia to the European Union. There were no plants listed. And then, while all these discussions were going on, then the Ukrainian situation developed. And then we had this political element which entered into this otherwise technical veterinary question. There it has become clear that the European Union was maintaining a firm line with the Russian authorities and said very clearly to the member states, you will not go and broker individual deals with Russia, we stand together. And at the same time, the United States has taken a firm line concerning the Ukrainian situation. And I think there is no question that this is impacting maybe the willingness of the authorities to move forward on certain of the technical questions. So while officially the technical discussions are still open and there is not meant to be any interference, it's clear today that no one is in any rush on that side to relist more plants for the United States. So currently we have three plants relisted. Some exports have restarted in pork, but I don't think we're going to see any further development from that. What was remarkable was that both on the Russian side, while there was certainly a price recovery in the live pork market, which was what the Russian producers were looking for, what they desired, is that there hasn't been any real problem with supply in Russia. Prices have gone up, but there is no dramatic shortage. There isn't any problem with Russian consumers being unsatisfied in the demand for pork. And what's even more remarkable is on the European Union side, that the anticipated potential collapse of the European pork market didn't happen. And as we've heard, that's because they found very good outlets, which were obviously already operating in Asia, but were able to increase their exports to Asia. And at the same time, I think that the estimates of production in the first quarter of this year in the European Union turned out to be overestimated. And so the situation is not in such an imbalance in the European Union. So there was an initial price decline, but then it flattened out, and now there's been some price recovery. There were initial requests from European Union suppliers to have aids from the European Commission. That's not happened, and it's not going to happen. So Unfortunately for us, it looks like this current situation is going to last for some time. We don't really expect any further development in Russia. That said, there are exports going on, so we estimate somewhere in the region between 25,000-30,000 tons have been exported of pork meat since the plants were relisted. For beef, Russia, in the meantime, has now clearly made it clear that they are going to apply their zero tolerance on the use of synthetic hormones in beef. So that presents a new problem. There haven't been any discussions between the United States and Russia on what to do about that. And again, right now, the climate is not particularly positive for having these discussions. What are we doing? What's USMEF doing? So for the time being, we continue to support those Russian companies who are interested still to have US product and would like to try and resolve this situation. In the meantime, our staff, we have two staff in Russia, in Moscow and St. Petersburg, and we've diverted some of our attention. We were already doing this before, but we've diverted the attention to our marketing efforts to the CIS countries. In the teams that we have visiting the United States, we have a team comprised of people from Ukraine, Azerbaijan, and Georgia, and we will continue to pursue our efforts in the wider CIS region. Let me move on to the Middle East.
John, can you just stay a little closer to the mic so people on the phone can get good audio from you? If everyone can do that, it makes it a little clearer on the phone. Thank you.
In the Middle East, we're pleased to see that the economic situation continues with good growth, good demand. We've talked about this many times before, but it's still incredible to see how both the domestic demand and the demand created from the tourism in the Middle East is just incredibly robust. We've had this year, the Gulf Food Show is getting bigger and bigger. This show in the last couple of years is becoming certainly, I would say, the second most important trade show in the world after the European shows of Anuga and Ciel. It's drawing people from not just the local Middle East region, but from much wider, further afield, across Eastern Europe, across Africa, and it's really buzzing. And it's a trade show where people come to do business. Gulf, the Emirates, still showing very, very positive activity, good growth, as is the rest of the Gulf countries. We still have market access problems in Saudi Arabia, which have been now going on for too long, more than 2 years. The Saudi market's been closed following the BSE incident in the United States. But finally, there has been some movement. There have been a visit from a senior Saudi official to the United States, and we hope that now that will break the ice a little bit and the discussions can continue and that we can see some progress there. Egypt, I remind you, of course, is our largest market for beef livers from the United States. And despite all the difficulties, the political turmoil in Egypt, and the decline of the Egyptian pound, again, it's incredible to see that the volumes of beef livers exported continue unchanged. Little bit of fluctuation in the muscle cuts because Egypt has been importing up to 30,000 tons of muscle cuts a year. Little bit of fluctuation sometimes when there's some weakness in the Egyptian pound, but again, that's come back again. And the situation in Egypt seems very clear that a country which is almost entirely dependent on imports for this type of product, and the United States remains a very, very competitive supplier of protein to the Egyptian market. I'll move on now to the European Union. So the European Union, we are very pleased to see that despite the price of US cattle, and despite the fact that the premium for a non-hormone-treated animal has reached absolutely record highs, we're hearing prices of well over $200, up in the high $200 a head for a non-hormone-treated cattle animal. And this is generating very, very high prices for the cuts which are going to the European Union, which for the whole carcass. And despite that, there has been no decrease in the demand in the European Union. What is unfortunate right now is that we're currently running into a few months where there is a chronic shortage of NHTC. I must say I'm rather disappointed by that, because the NHTC premium has been very healthy. It's been well above $180, $200 a head for more than 2.5 years now. And I would have expected that that would send a strong economic signal to American farmers to benefit from that premium. What it seems right now is simply that the number, the cattle numbers in the United States and the prices that are ready to be paid for cattle today has had an impact in the short term that some farmers who would have committed or had started out on an NHTC program decided that the opportunity was just too good to be missed for a quick sale with a quick implant, finish the cattle, and cash in. I hope that situation turns around, because it would be very unfortunate to have this very good demand in the European Union. It's the highest value market for beef exports from the United States, running about $200 million a year. It would be unfortunate to miss out a little bit on that. We have, as you know, this duty-free beef quota, 48,200 tons. Currently, the United States is using about 50% of that quota. Slight gray cloud in the sky, and that our competitors, Australia and Uruguay, are now also using an equivalent amount of that quota. We, of course, would much rather see that this quota, which is a result of a bilateral agreement between the European Union and the United States, remains to the benefit of the United States. That brings me on a little bit to TTIP, so the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. The fifth round of discussions are going on this week in Washington. They haven't got down to the sort of details which give us anything to talk about yet. The only thing I would say is that it's unfortunate that the sort of signals that have been sent out from the European side are what I would say not in in the spirit of what was laid out at the outset of these discussions. The TTIP discussions were requested by the European Union, and the United States said, yes, we agree to talk to you about a trade agreement on the grounds that it will be all-inclusive and comprehensive, and that means we have to talk about everything. And before they've even got down to talking about the issues which interest in agriculture, we see European leaders taking every opportunity in public to stand up and say, of course, there's a red line. Of course, we're not going to change the fundamental, fundamental guarantees and safety that is assured to the European consumer, i.e., they don't want to change their policy concerning authorization of GMOs or the use of growth promoters. And I think that's not a very positive way to approach the negotiations. It seems very clear that these negotiations were launched at a time when the European Union was in the middle of a deep financial crisis, with a very real concern of that the Eurozone could break apart. Today, our leaders, the central bank, is saying that the worst is behind us, that things are getting better, that we have some growth, and so in some respects the pressure to conclude a TTIP, which was initiated with the objective of creating growth on both sides of the Atlantic, creating jobs, the pressure seems to have been taken off on the European side. Now, whether or not that's really the case remains to be seen. It's amazing in Europe you have 50% unemployment of people under 25 years old in four countries across the European Union. In the southern European countries, you have 25% unemployment overall in Italy and in Spain. And it's remarkable that there aren't more incidents and troubles in the European Union. I will stop there.